Welcome to Great Photography. This is Daniel Sig. In today's episode, I will have another conversation with Valerie Chardin. Valerie is a professional photographer and has been recognized internationally for her street photography. She leads workshops worldwide, writes books, and is also an official ex-photographer for Fujifilm USA. I am excited that Zencastr.com has become a new sponsor to my podcast. Zencastr is a browser-based podcast production application that records each person locally, then uploads the top quality audio files right into the application. I have been using Zencastr to record all my podcasts from day zero of Create Photography and love its ease of use for myself as well as for my guests. If you're interested to start your own podcast, go to Zencastr.com and check it out. Please use Create Photography in one word as a discount code on Zencastr.com for a 30% discount off their pro plan. Valerie, welcome back to Create Photography. It's really great to have you back on the podcast.
Well, thank you. I love to be here again with you.
All right. So the theme that we discussed for today's podcast is unobtrusive street photography. So to set the stage, I'd love maybe if you could give me a definition of, you know, what that could mean. What is unobtrusive street photography?
Yes. Well, a lot of people have a misconception, first of all, of what street photography is. I think a lot of people automatically think it's being in people's face and up close and, you know, having people like deer in headlights half the time. And some people do that type of photography and do it really well. It can make for really strong photographs, but it's just not for everyone. And I'm so glad, because if that's the way everybody did it, I think there would be a lot of angry people on the streets. And some people are really reluctant to post photographs of recognizable faces on social media. I mean, there's been a lot of privacy laws out there, which are really, really gray and should definitely not scare people from posting recognizable faces on social media at all. But some people are a bit nervous about that. And so I want to show people there are ways to go around that and still pursue this beautiful genre of street photography without showing recognizable faces all the time. And it's a challenge, I think, that can be really fun. And some people may do both. I think you could definitely be up close and quite personal and photograph people without being disrespectful, because I really do think that provoking eye contact with a subject is a no-no in my book. I love when the eye contact is natural and happens spontaneously. Yep. Can't say that word properly. But I don't ever provoke it, and I don't like it. I wouldn't want somebody to do that to me. But you can still have beautiful photographs of emotion and facial expressions that are very strong. You can still do that, but choose not to post those photographs, for example, on social media, and then post photographs that are a little bit less obtrusive.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, what, as I was like kind of thinking about our episode today and kind of preparing for it, I was also thinking about, you know, the concept of that we're unobtrusive. You know, yes, we don't want to, you know, photograph recognizable faces, but then also the notion of not maybe interfering with the scene or interfering with the, you know, so being more of an observer. Mm-hmm. And so that was one aspect. And the other, I also was thinking about, you know, is to just not get noticed now, you know, or to try to blend in. Is that kind of what you're thinking about as well when you're thinking about unobtrusive? Or
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. So it can be more the anonymity of the subject itself or the photographer being invisible. So, those are two actually different things, but they kind of go hand in hand, because obviously if you want to photograph people without being noticed, you're going to have to make yourself invisible. And that's something you learn to do, as a street photographer, because every real street photography or documentary photography is completely candid. Nothing is staged, nothing is posed. And that's why it is so difficult. I mean, if you start asking people to do this or do that or pose, then you take the merit out of the equation. Yes, you'll have lovely photographs, but they're pretty easy because you're directing at that point. So I'm assuming that, you know, I'm talking with real authentic street photographers who do not stage their shots. So yes, then you have to be invisible even when you get really close to people. And I do get close to people, I mean, to the point where I actually bump into them sometimes. And some of my strongest photographs have been really, really up close. But by using a smaller camera and not bringing your camera, the camera to your eye, and and dressing a certain way, and there's a lot of things you can do to make yourself less conspicuous. So, and then if you're invisible, then you will get the shot. It is a lot of time people mistake that with being sneaky. And it's not that. Is that whenever a story catches your eye, it if the subject notices you, then the moment is gone, and then why bother? There's no picture. So the point is to be able to capture that moment, that fraction of a second in a stranger's life, without them realizing you're doing it. Otherwise, the moment is gone. And then after that, if they notice you, it's not a big deal. I am never worried about that. Never. Okay. So, because I'm always very respectful. And it happens that people will notice me after I have the shot. But it's after I have the shot. So it doesn't bother me. I caught the moment in its candid, pure candid form. And that's the important part.
So that kind of answers indirectly my next question, because, you know, just I was curious how important you feel it is to be unobtrusive in the sense of being not noticed as a street photographer. Because, you know, if you, I guess I'm thinking about, you know, if somebody has a camera around their neck or something, you know, and somebody might be observant, they obviously do notice that person. But yeah, that's just my question. What are your thoughts around that? I mean, do you think it is? Is it that critical?
I mean, I used to do the same type of photography I do today 8-9 years ago with a DSLR. So there was no way of being invisible at that point. And I would still get really close to people. I had a prime lens I was shooting, usually with a 40 pancake lens. I was shooting with a 5D Mark II. That was my last DSLR before I switched to a very small mirrorless camera. And so I would still be close. I never used live view back then, ever. So I would always bring the camera to my eye. And the camera was loud. Now I have a camera that's completely silent. So, and I use mechanical shutter, but because it's a leaf shutter in the lens, I can't even hear it. So it's so much easier now to get close without being noticed, because the gear is smaller, it's quieter. But I think it also has a lot to do with the way the photographer feels too, and the vibes that the photographer will put out there. If you're really, really nervous, and you get close, people will notice you, because they will just, those vibes will kind of transfer over, and they will feel it, and everybody will be uncomfortable. But if you feel good about what you do, and you see the importance of what you do as a documentary photographer, capturing the beauty of everyday life in a moment of history now, today, that could potentially have, you know, value when people look at it in many years from now and say, oh, this is, yeah, this is how people were dressed back then. This is how the cars were. I mean, we love looking at pictures from the, you know, from the early masters. So if you feel good about that, then I think you will naturally be more invisible because you are, I don't know, I think everything kind of falls into place. And even after the fact, when if people notice you, we have nothing to hide. You're not doing anything wrong. Mm-hmm. So share with them. Share what you're doing with them and show them what you, you know, the photograph, if you shoot, a lot of people are still shooting film, so it's not always possible, but especially in street photography, but show them, share with them and tell them what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I think people are more curious about what you saw in them than they're not upset. It's very, very rare that anybody would be upset that you actually saw something interesting in them. So, I think you have to feel good about what you're doing because you're not doing anything wrong. It, actually, you're doing something very important because if you do it right, if you do it respectfully.
Yeah. So then you would say, you know, if we are not noticed or, you know, at least we're kind of blending in, you would say that this will more likely lead to more genuine or more candid captures? Is that a fair
statement? Absolutely, because no one is noticing you. So it's also important to be, like if you're shooting in Paris, well, I'm French, so I tend to dress, you know, the French way. I really don't, I don't own any colors actually, black, white, or gray. So then you kind of blend in. If you are shooting in Paris and you wear your Hawaiian shirt, you may not blend in as much. So, you know, you kind of have to blend in with the type of subjects you on the street so you don't stand out. It's not a good time to wear your red and white polka dot rain jacket, for example. So, you know, that that's kind of common sense. And then and then also on workshops I teach people how to get close by not and it's really hard to explain without showing, but there's so many different ways you can actually get close to people without them noticing you. You know, you can use your phone as a decoy and have your camera pointed in their direction, but they can't really notice it because they think you're texting or things like that. There's so many ways you can actually get close to people. And again, it's not about being sneaky. It's about getting the moment before they realize they realize that they're being photographed. After that, I don't mind. I don't mind having a conversation with the subject after the fact, as long as they didn't notice that I photographed them. After that, I can answer all their questions and I can tell them why them, what did I see, what am I doing? It's more curiosity at that point. People just don't know what street photography is. They assume that you're going to use the photograph for something, I don't know, like a paparazzis do or something. I don't know.
So, and you partially answered that question already. My next question is around, you know, the problems if you're being noticed, because I think a lot of, you know, photographers who are getting into street photography, right? That is one of those fears, right? To get noticed and somebody will confront you and all that stuff. But you said, you know, in reality, this happens rarely. So can you elaborate on this a little bit? I mean, you're obviously very experienced now, so you're doing this professionally as well. But I mean, even for, would you still say it happens rarely that people really get upset or that there are issues, or, you know, what are some of the maybe tips even to deal with that?
You know, I'm on the streets with hundreds of photographers on a normal year on workshops. So I teach everywhere. And so I've experienced every type of situation a street photographer can experience, you know, either myself or through some of my students. So number one, never become confrontational back. Mm-hmm. Never, even if you're in your right. And in most places, as long as you're in a public space, you have the right to photograph strangers. Mm-hmm. But it's my opinion that no matter where you are, whether you're in a country where there are strict privacy laws or you're in a place where everything goes, people have the right to be upset if they're being photographed and to say, hey, I don't want to be photographed. Mm-hmm. That is their right, no matter what the law says. Mm-hmm. And that's what respecting your subject means. It's respecting their personal choice. And so, for example, if you photograph someone and they say, oh, did you just photograph me? And you say, yeah, I mean, the moment is amazing. The light, the way light hits your red hat or whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. always tell them what you saw. Or I'm documenting people walking their dogs on the streets of Paris, or mm-hmm. I'm documenting people with hats on the streets of New York, whatever it is, just be mm-hmm. open about it. Mm-hmm. And then usually that will be enough. You'll show them the back of the picture, give them your card, makes you a little bit more legit. Yep. And then tell them it's just for me. I'm working on you're a street photographer. You're not working for a client. So you're always working mm-hmm. for yourself. It's a personal project. So it's a personal project. So, and then if they're still are upset about it, then appease them. Don't become confrontational, telling them, hey, I'm in my rights. No, mm-hmm. no. Never mm-hmm. a good time to say that. Yep. That's plain rude to tell someone, you know, if they're confrontational, just be confrontational back. That's a no-no. Yep. So appease them. And if they say, no, I don't want to be photographed, and it happens, just say, oh, no problem. Here, I'll just get rid of the picture. Mm-hmm. No one can actually ask you to delete a picture, even law enforcement. So be aware of that. But I always tell my student, how good are you going to feel about using this picture or showing it if it was such a bad experience for the subject?
Yeah.
Most people would not. If really it is the photograph of the century and there is no harm done, know that even if you delete it, as long as you don't format your card, it's still there somewhere. But always try to appease the situation and leave the scene, you know, thanking the person. A smile goes a long way, and usually nothing else happens. I mean, there are cranky people anywhere in the world.
Sure.
But the street photographer should always remain calm and friendly. That's definitely a must.
Yeah. Yeah, and you did bring up there's a lot of great points, but one point that I just want to follow up on is, you know, having some sort of either a card or, mm-hmm. or a little bit, a piece of maybe a little booklet of your work or whatever. I personally actually experienced that a couple times where I did architectural street photography, but I was, you know, just security guards were stopping me. Mm-hmm. And so that was... In those situations, it was actually very helpful to have something to say, look, that I do that just for, you know, for this, and here's some of the work I do. And so kind of alleviated in this particular case.
That's a good point. Security guards are more likely to stop you for photographing architecture than any stranger on the streets.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And so it happened to me a couple of times because mm-hmm. I like to do the architectural stuff. Yep. But anyway, Well, that was great info. So I'm maybe moving into some of the techniques to go on unnoticed or be unobtrusive. You alluded to some of them already, but maybe if you can discuss some of those, that would be great.
So yes, I think first of all, if you learn to use your camera in live view, whether you have a tilt screen or not. I just recently got a camera with a tilt screen because I've been shooting with the X100 series since it came out. So 10 years now, but I started a year into the series. So 9 years of shooting with the X100.
Oh, wow.
And the fifth edition of the camera is the first one with a tilt screen. I didn't want it, honestly. I didn't think it was necessary on that camera. But now that I have it, I actually do use it. But once you know your camera really well and you know your focal length, and I only, you know, I shoot with that camera 95% of the time, and I'm at 23 millimeters. So I know my focal length so well that it has become the way I see. So I know exactly where I need to be to get the frame I'm envisioning. So, a prime lens is definitely a must for street photography. And if you don't have one, use your zoom and this, just set it at 35 or 18 or whatever, you know, try different focal length that fits your style and then stick with that. You don't need to move your zoom. You could just use it as a prime lens. Then eventually you can maybe get a good prime lens in that focal length that feels right for you. So know your gear, know where you need to stand to get the right frame, because, you know, the goal too is to get it right in camera. You're not going to make a picture from a picture. So always assume, go out there as if you don't have a cropping tool and try to get it just right in camera. The cropping tool will save the day at the end if you need it, but you won't get as much satisfaction as if you get it right in camera, which is always should be the goal. And then put your camera on silent, use the screen, and then try to really don't point the camera until the moment is right, because you're waiting for that quote unquote decisive moment where the subject is going to do something, a gesture or turn a certain way so that the light hits their face a certain way or whatever it is. Don't machine gun it, because that may bring more attention to you unless your camera is completely silent. So try to be deliberate and then wait for the right moment to press the shutter. I think that's one thing. You can certainly, I wear sunglasses a lot, so be careful that if they're polarized, you can still look at you may not be able to see the back of your camera as well, but sunglasses will avoid eye contact with the subject. And then they don't really know which direction you're going. So that can be good. Unless it's really dark and rainy, then that might actually draw more attention on you.
It's a little suspicious.
It's a bit suspicious, yes. Yeah. And then you can always, if the person is starting to look in your direction, you can always pretend you're photographing the architecture behind them, you know, and kind of divert the attention that way. There's so many little tricks that you can do to divert the attention.
Oh, that's great. And you brought up the clothing as well, right? I mean, just to be maybe blended. Just have clothing that's not, that doesn't stand out.
Some pink, exactly. Yeah, because if you then become the subject of the other other photographers
that could
on
be
the street,
good too, right?
Exactly. That maybe you're not dressed the right way.
Yeah. Exactly. So what if we? You talked about the time when you were with the DSLR camera and you know, so you didn't have the stealth camera that you have now. Is that even then, right? Would you just say, well, just go with it, but just don't like have it, hold it up until you're ready and just, right?
Yeah,
is that
absolutely okay? And then just be completely honest about and open about it at that point. I mean, I've photographed people in the subway with a DSLR when the subway is moving and we're all in the same, you know, I'm in the same car with the subject. At that point, you know, I had the camera in front of my face. I'm just going to do it. And then, you know, just deal with the consequences because the moment is really good. Then at that point, don't try to be sneaky, because you won't be able to be invisible. So just be open about it and then just be ready to explain why. So that is a little bit of a different approach, but I think it's more intimidating for a subject to have a DSLR pointed at them than a small camera that's inconspicuous, because there's no way you're going to be invisible with that, and it's loud. Thankfully, there's no need for those cameras anymore, and I never see one on a workshop anymore. I mean, it's actually quite – I've been doing workshops for 10 years now, so and I have a small group of 8 to 10 photographers on each workshop. 10 years ago, there would be like one small camera on a workshop, and then within 3 years, there would be maybe two DSLRs left. And now it's like, it's rare that I see one.
And if
I see one, usually the photographer who comes on another workshop in a different country the year later has a smaller camera because they, or they use their phone because they see the advantage of shooting with something smaller. And now we don't compromise quality for size. So it, you know, it's a no-brainer. Anyone who's starting today will get a small camera or use their phone. But if all you have is a DSLR, we'll start with that and then see if you like it.
So I have a question on, you know, we can blend in. It's maybe easier for us in, you know, in a Western city, for example, right? If we are, you know, Westerners, so to say, but let's say we are in Asia or Africa. So now by default, we would stand out perhaps, right? What do you say? How would we go about it then?
Well, you know, you're going to have to adapt your style to the culture anyway. Maybe at that point, you will be more of a photo documentary photographer where you'll tell the story of a local merchant with their approval. That doesn't mean that it's not going to be candid. Maybe you'll do a portrait because usually people are super excited when they have a photographer paying attention to them. So you can't get away without that pose portrait. But then, you know, just try to explain to them or, you know, just do your thing. You know, like, can I document what you're doing? Could be a craftsman, you know, somebody working with wood, whatever it is, for example. So it's more travel photography maybe at that point, but with a street photography hat. And then you will document, you'll do the full story, you know, establishing shots, medium shots, and a lot of detail shots of the hands working the wood or leather, whatever they're doing. So you may want to try that approach if you don't want to just be stuck doing portraits of people. So try to do a full story. And that usually works. Otherwise, again, as we talked earlier about photographing more anonymously, you may want to just be a little bit further out and do silhouettes of people on the streets of Tokyo, wherever you are, and be a little bit less conspicuous that way. Just be a little bit further out, do some silhouettes, do some. I mean, you can even photograph the back of people, but know that photographing the back of people is actually much harder to make it work because you don't have a facial expression. So the person has to be that much more interesting. So it could be good, but it's not as easy as it seems. You can photograph, you can do motions and do panning on the streets. There's so many other things you can do without standing out.
So I often bring up the metaphor of the hunter and the fisherman, street photographer. And in this context, and just for our listeners, so the hunter is obviously hunting on the streets for interesting subjects and things, while the fisherman metaphor is more, you know, the photographer who is patiently waiting in a scene until something interesting happens. So is there one of those, you know, those are a little stereotypical, I know, but are of those two approaches, is there one better than the other for being unobtrusive? or do you think it doesn't matter?
No, I think the fisherman approach is definitely the way to go if you're a bit shy. Because when you're hunting, you are pretty much always walking and, you know, reacting to things that are happening in the moment right in front of you. So that takes more skills in a way because you have to be not only quick, you have to react quickly, you have to have your settings right, you know, before you even get the shot. So there's like a million things that come into play that you have to that come into play to make a successful photograph that have to come together in that fraction of a second. So it's more difficult, but you can't really hide in that situation. So you have to really know some tricks and techniques to be as visible as possible, although you're really close to people. However, if you find a great location, like an architectural backdrop, an old textured wall or whatever, then you find a spot where, and then you wait for a good subject, and good is the key word, because mm-hmm. not the first person, that's going to walk through that frame is probably not going to be a great subject. So patience then is key, but you're ready. You have your settings ready. You know exactly where you need to stand to get the proper shot. You can lean against a post to be more comfortable, because you may mm-hmm. be waiting for 30 minutes or an hour for the right subject to come through your frame. But then at that point, you know, the camera is definitely not going to be in front of your face, because you're right. never going to stand that long with a camera in front of your eye. And so people will tend to ignore you because you're kind of part of the architecture at that point. So, mm-hmm. And so I would say the fisherman approach for a new photographer is probably going to be easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you have to be, you have to wait for the right subject. That's right. The biggest thing when I do critiques is like, everything was there. the light was good. The backdrop was great. You know, and then there was a potential of a good subject to come through, but then the photographer is not patient enough.
Yeah,
and just takes a picture of the first subject, and then the stepping is all wrong, and then the subject ruins the backdrop at that point.
Right.
So
then
it's patience and discernment. A lot of photographers, street photographers, are not discerning enough because they're not patient enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd rather leave an amazing backdrop and not take one picture, then settle for a mediocre mm-hmm. subject. I think you should always visualize what would make a great subject in that context, in that environment. For example, you're in the business district of wherever, Melbourne, mm-hmm. Australia. Well, you kind of want to have somebody that matches that district, for example. You're not going to photograph a tourist. That doesn't fit. You always want to find the subject that fits in that space. You in Italy, you want to photograph Italian. You want to photograph locals, Italian people. They stand out. You're not going to mistake an American tourist for an Italian person.
Right.
So just learn to recognize that. It's pretty easy. Same with Paris. So photograph locals. And mm-hmm. And then photograph them in a elegant stepping, a dynamic stepping. I see a lot of time where, yeah, the subject is great. So now we have mm-hmm. that extra element, great background, great light, great subject. And then boom, the subject in that really awkward
yep.
stepping position, which right. ruins the shot. So
yep.
there's so many elements that are going to make or break that frame.
Right.
And that's
right.
why it's so difficult, but that's why it's so exciting and fun,
oh,
because
yeah.
it is difficult.
It is difficult, yeah. So you mentioned earlier, Valerie, that unobtrusive street photography lends itself to, you know, if we talk about subgenres of street photography, I would say maybe the documentarian or candid type mm-hmm. street photography, correct? So if we think of other styles of street photographies or subgenres, let's say fine art, street photography, or abstract, or others, do you think it's still important? How important is it there to be unobtrusive?
Well, as long as it's going to be candid, you're going to have to be unobtrusive.
Okay.
The only time that you want people to notice you is actually, well, one, if you're doing a street portrait, then you have
yep. Yep.
you have the subject knows he or she is being photographed. Not that you want to pose them a certain way, but at least they know that they're being photographed. Or two, if you want to startle them, and you know, some photographers even use a flash on the street and startle their subject. It's mm-hmm. not for everyone. Once again, that is something I don't want to do. I don't like. I would not do, because it often reflects on the personality of the of the photographer, and it's just not me. I would hate for a photographer to come startle me, take a picture of me up close, and then walk away. I would probably punch them. So don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you, and then you'll be fine. So those can make really powerful photograph. You know, it can be, but it's not for everyone. So so beware. You may get yourself in trouble. But then otherwise, if you photograph even silhouettes, I mean, you can have some really nice, more artsy street photographs, you know, working with light and shadows where it doesn't matter. You're far enough anyways that nobody nobody even knows that you're photographing in their direction. So then it's no problem.
Well, that was a nice lead-in, or what you just said about, you know, kind of more the intrusive style. So let's talk about the opposite for a moment. Whether this is a subgenre or not, I don't know. But Bruce Gilden, of course, comes to mind as the prototypical in-your-face aggressive photographer. You know, I guess, and the other thing, you know, with intrusive, so the opposite would be they would be possibly part of the scene and they might even evoke something, right? They might cause a reaction. Now, what are your thoughts about, you know, you I think it's not going to be your style, but I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about, you know, that particular approach?
I don't like it. However, it happens that the subject notices me at the very moment that I press the shutter, but that's unprovoked and completely spontaneous. And that is often what makes the photograph powerful. So there are times where it really works. I just would not provoke it or be in people's face. I can be within inches to a person's face, but I'm not in their face. As in, I'm close so that I could even be on somebody's shooting from somebody's shoulder so that I have the side of their face and it looks like I'm seeing through their eyes. But because my camera is silent and I'm really quick and I can get those shots just walking out of a cafe, but it's never going to be in their face. So that's two different things. And I really think it reflects the personality of the photographer. It's just not me.
Right. So I have a few more questions before we wrap up. So the first one, switching gears a little bit, are you currently giving or planning any workshops? I know we're in the Omicron surge right now. So it's always a moving target, it seems.
I know. It was such a... I'm hoping it's short and then a three-month thing and then we're back to where we were in November. I did actually. I restarted after a year, almost a year and a half. I started workshops again last year in June, and I had a really great summer and fall season. So I was I taught in the U.S. and in France only, but it was good. You know, it was not even half of the workshops I normally do in a year, but it felt so good. It was so great. Yeah. Unfortunately, I had to cancel a full workshop in Paris in January, which would normally be January 15 and 16. But some of the participants were in the UK and unable to travel to France because of restrictions, and then others were coming from many other countries. And although everybody was ready to, most of them were ready to go. It's like it doesn't seem like a very smart thing to do. And now, and so when I canceled a few weeks ago, and reschedule people in other workshops as much as possible. Now that I see that Omicron is going to peak in France that very week, I'm quite glad because, you know, a lot of people have had it. Everybody is vaccinated on my workshop anyways. It's a must, but a lot of people have had it. But then if you test positive, you can't go back home for a lot of people. Right. Like in the US, you have to test negative both ways. Right. So the risk of being stuck You know, mm-hmm. it's pretty high. So I had to cancel this one. But yes, it's starting again in April with Rome, and then Paris in May, and Copenhagen after that, and Minneapolis in between. There's New York in there too, and then Paris again in the fall. So yes, it's and everybody's ready to go. Those workshops are filling up really quickly.
That's great.
Everyone is ready to go back to normal. And it really felt normal in the fall. Yeah. So I'm hoping that after Omicron is done,
hopefully, by April. That's the usual. The coronavirus is that we're endemic before COVID, right? I think the usual season actually ends around April. So hopefully, that'll be good timing for your workshops.
At that point, we'll all be exposed to it. So whether we get symptoms or not, exactly. So maybe maybe that's going to mark the beginning of the end. And I'm hoping that we can take a deep breath, because it's been difficult. I know some of my colleagues haven't restarted at all, and that's 2 years.
It's very challenging.
I was so happy, and honestly, once we were on workshops, whether it was in France or in the US, we never even thought about COVID for the time we were on the workshop, because we were all so happy to be surrounded by photography goodness and like-minded people for a weekend or a week, that it was like a breath of fresh air. I can't wait. for April.
So and speaking of, where can our listeners find you online?
They can Google my name, they'll find me, and everything is on my website. So it's Valérie Jardin, I can't even say it. Sorry. ValerieJardin. And that's also on Instagram and Twitter and .com for my website.
Oh, that's awesome. And so speaking of, so one more final question. So you just released an ebook on how to boost your creativity, and thanks for sharing that with me. I think it's great. Can we briefly talk about this before we close out?
Yes. It's a free little ebook, because I have many books that are published, whether you can find them at the bookstore or some online only on my website. But this one is, everybody was feeling so down the past few months. So I just released this free little ebook, 10 Tips to Boost Your Creativity. And it's very short, very simple, but everybody has found something in there. It's been very popular. Everybody's found something in there that they could apply right away, whether it's getting out of their comfort zone or giving themselves assignments or things like that. So it's 10 tips to kind of give you a little boost for the new year. I think we all need it a little bit.
For sure, yeah, for sure.
Well, so they can go on my website and download
and
it
and find
for
it
free.
There too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we'll... We'll link to it in the show notes as well. So that's great. Okay. Well, great. Valérie, thank you so much for being on the podcast again. It was a lot of fun. It was great to talk about unobtrusive street photography and your experience and a lot of great tips. So thanks so much again, and really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I wish a great creative new year to all your listeners.
All right, this wraps up our episode with Valérie Jardin. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful to talk about unobtrusive street photography and hear some of her tips. As always, you can find the show notes at danielsickphotography.com. You can also find them on your favorite podcast player, wherever you download the podcast. We'll have some links to her website and also to the ebook we were referring to at the very end. As always, if you'd like to support this podcast, please go to buymeacoffee.com/DanielSig, and any contribution will go to the production costs of this podcast and are highly appreciated. Thanks again to our sponsors from Zencastr, and thanks again for listening, and talk to you next time.